from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Brian Watt.
Why do I know that name? Wait a minute. Aren't you on KQED Morning Edition? What are you doing here?
Well, you invited me, and I don't refuse many invitations.
Welcome to the podcast, Brian. I'm Lily Jamali. We are going to start today's podcast on a serious note in Sacramento, where last night, behind closed doors, the city's largest school district unanimously approved more than 100 staff layoffs.
Sacramento City Unified School District is expected to run out of money by this fall as it stares down a staggering $35 million budget deficit. We spoke with one of the teachers who's on the list of people awaiting a pink slip, Julie Law Marin, a social science teacher at Kennedy High School. She's going to be working there until the pink slip comes.
That's right. She's been teaching for 7 years and was only hired by Sacramento City Unified in 2018. And Brian, when districts lay teachers off, it's last hired, first fired. KQED's Polly Stryker spoke with her while she was on a field trip with her students.
It was definitely tough. I had to take a step back. A lot of people were extremely supportive, reminding me this is not a personal attack against me, but rather a process that would occur as a result of conditions throughout the district rather than perhaps at my site or individual actions that I took. It was definitely hard because you go through this phase in your head. Do you tell your students about it? Do you not tell your students about it? At a point, the students are curious. I had students walk in when they had gotten more information about that layoffs would occur with their teachers, whether or not I was one of the teachers. A few of the students were able to draw conclusions as their high school sophomores. Well, she has less seniority, so likely that would happen to her.
I know teachers get attached to students, and you grow to really be fond of your class. So all of a sudden, it sounds like you're going to be having to leave your classroom. What happens to the students and to you?
And that's definitely the hardest part of the situation. I teach high school freshmen and sophomores with the intention that the next year they might see me again on campus, and I'm someone that they can reach out to and communicate with as they need help and guidance throughout their schooling at the high school. For a lot of my students, I am the stability. I'm the person that they see consistently every day that they can count on. So for me personally, I made the decision to not necessarily mention it yet because I didn't want them to feel like another adult was letting them down.
That was Sacramento teacher Julie Law Marin, and she is expected, Brian, to get official word of her future by early next week.
In San Diego, the U.S. Department of Justice on Thursday announced hate crime charges against the man authorities say opened fire on the Chabad of Poway synagogue last month. From KPBS in San Diego, reporter Andrew Bowen has more.
The shooting killed one woman and injured three people. The federal complaint has 109 hate crimes and civil rights violations. That's two for each person in the synagogue during the attack on April 27th, plus one charge for the suspect's alleged arson attack on an Escondido mosque 1 month prior. U.S. Attorney Robert Brewer says the suspect sought to obstruct people's right to practice their religion.
The defendant violently targeted members of the synagogue and the mosque for no other reason than his hatred of the Jewish people and those of the Muslim faith.
The suspect already pleaded not guilty to state charges. Assistant U.S. Attorney Shane Harrigan says he'll be arraigned in federal court next week.
Ultimately, the decision on what case is tried first or how this is handled will be a joint decision. Understand, though, that any decision that is made will be in the best interest of the case and of ensuring that this defendant can be punished to the full extent of the law.
Prosecutors say they'll determine whether to seek the death penalty after consulting with survivors. For the California Report, I'm Andrew Bowen in San Diego.
And Lily, you were on the air during the most crowded and watched game of Follow the Bouncing Ball. Shares of San Francisco-based Uber started trading this morning on the New York Stock Exchange.
That's right, and I spoke with tech reporter Mike Isaac of the New York Times a few minutes before that very first trade, which was delayed by about 20 minutes.
Yeah, so right now they're doing sort of price indication and price discovery on the stock. It's not actually looking that good. So they priced it at $45 a share, I believe, the night before, and now they're down close to 42, 43 range. And that means that it has not started trading yet, but that means that it would actually be opening trading at below the IPO price, which was just not be a good thing on the very first day for them.
Yeah, translate that for us. What does that mean? Why is that not a good thing?
Sure. So basically, you know, on an IPO of any company, on day one, bankers try to price a stock, you know, with the ability so the company can raise as much money as possible, but also leave a little room for the traders who begin trading so that the stock will go up from the original price. That's called a first day pop. And you usually want to see a healthy pop of a few dollars over the stock price as it begins trading. Mm-hmm. And so instead, we're seeing right now, so far, like sort of the inverse of that, like going what's called breaking price or going under. And that's just bad news for traders. It might have to do with the market. It might have to do with shaky confidence in Uber's growth trajectory. But it's not a positive sign for the company.
Now, if I understand correctly, you're standing on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as you speak to me on the phone. What's it like down there right now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I got here around 8 o'clock. It was forming with people. It was in line with some folks that had a six-pack and were ready to start celebrating.
A six-pack of what?
Floor. A six-pack of, I think it was an IPA of some sort. not exactly sure, but it was definitely alcoholic. And, you know, it was relatively drama-free morning, too. Leading up to this, there were questions as to whether the founder would be ringing the bell, Travis Kalanick, and they didn't allow him on the bell. But they did have, like, a nice moment together where Travis and some of the early founders met with Dara Khosrowshahi, the current CEO, and they had like basically a meeting of the minds and kind of like a bury the hatchet moment. It was actually really nice. So the whole point for Uber this morning is to be as drama free as possible. And so far it has been, except for this whole price problem that they have.
Mm-hmm. Mike Isaac from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange for us this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
So my question is, why does it always have to be IPA?
Yeah, I don't like IPAs. Way too bitter.
Well, we're stuck with it.
But, you know, if it's a Sierra Nevada, I'll take an India Pale Ale anytime.
All right.
If I have to.
Also this morning, President Trump raised tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods coming into the U.S. Trump called the move a punishment for China's attempt to renegotiate a trade deal. In a tweet this morning, Trump also said this will help rather than hurt the U.S. and bring in, quote, far more wealth.
Yeah, this is interesting for a day that Uber is going public because it's been the worst week of trading, I think, since December. And so not exactly the ideal conditions to be taking your company public after years and years of anticipation. In any case, California small businesses who have been relying on imported products from China are feeling the heat from all of this. Take it from Michael Fishman. He's a co-owner of a bike shop in Burbank. Fishman says he had to hike prices of his bikes by 10% after the last round of tariffs.
We're about making bikes accessible and making them for the masses, and our mission is to get more people on bikes, so that we're not making in China because they have the cheapest labor or the cheapest product, but the infrastructure to make a bike is there. There's so many different parts on a bike, whether it's the frame and welding it, to making the grips, to making the saddle, the tires, the tubes, the pedals, the cranks, the chains, like all these parts, there's many more, all are made in China. You know, the impact is really on the consumer, which is the worst part, because having to raise our prices to our customers as a company who's trying to make things more affordable is just horrible.
Trade talks with China are expected to continue today despite the new tariffs.
And I know folks at the ports of Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Oakland will be watching very closely.
Of course.
Let's go to the state capitol now, where Governor Gavin Newsom performed a bit of a juggling act when announcing the revision to his budget proposal on Thursday. Newsom wants to spend more on education and addressing income inequality in the state, but he's also cautious about a recession. KQED political reporter Katie Orr has details.
Newsom is proposing a record-setting $213.5 billion budget. As required by law, nearly half will go toward education. He's proposing more than $81 billion for schools, including more for special education and teacher training.
We will have the highest investment in our K-14 education system in California history.
Newsom would also spend $1 billion to combat homelessness, which he called a stain on California. The majority of the money would go to local governments to pay for emergency housing and other things. But much as his predecessor Jerry Brown often did, Governor Newsom cautioned an economic downturn could be on the horizon.
I'll remind folks we've had 10 recessions since World War II. We're entering the 10th year of an expansion. We're feeling anxiety, even in contemporary terms, in the last 48, 72 hours with the markets.
In preparation, Newsom wants to pay down debt and deposit more than $1 billion into the state's rainy day fund. That would bring the reserve to more than $16 billion next year. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
And in his budget revision, Governor Newsom also doubled down on his original plan to build more new housing in the state, saying, quote, "We cannot step back from our resolve and commitment to construct new homes."
Speaking of housing, in the northern part of the state, the North Tahoe and Truckee communities have been making a concerted effort to tackle the area's housing shortage. Reporter Amy Westervelt brings us this look at some of the solutions they've come up with.
A beaten-up industrial park sits on a prime sliver of riverfront in downtown Truckee. A group of locals hope that within a couple of years, a vibrant co-housing development will take its place. They started talking about the idea in early 2017, then hosted a two-day workshop
on how to go from a bunch of people having potlucks to a lean, mean co-housing machine.
That's Morgan Goodwin, an early member of the co-housing group.
We moved pretty quickly to purchase a piece of land after that.
23 households have now invested in the project, chipping in toward the cost of the land and building up to 40 one, two, and three-bedroom homes, all of them around a shared outdoor space and a large community house. They'll pool resources like snowblowers and cable TV and commit to helping their neighbors. That was a huge draw for Juliet Bradley.
I've really been thinking about how to downsize and how to move out of the snow because I'm 67, I'm not getting younger, and how do I do this?
Co-housing units will range from $300,000 to $800,000, providing quite a few affordable homes in an area currently out of reach for locals. Regional officials are permitting more affordable homes as part of a way to tackle the housing crisis. They've also begun working on bringing more in-law units and tiny homes to the area. That came on the heels of state legislation that makes it easier to build them. Shauna Doherty is project director for the Mountain Housing Council.
What we're working on right now is coming up with two prototypes that would be modular. One is about 436 square feet, one is about 500, and trying to get the price down to about 80 to 125.
Doherty is working with both developers and the public to change the idea that Tahoe homes have to be ski lodges for visitors as opposed to smaller, more affordable units for year-round residents. For the California Report, I'm Amy Westervelt in Truckee.
And that is the California Report podcast for this Friday, May 10th, a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Rob Spate and Jim Bennett and Seal Muller. I'm Brian Watt.
Brian Watt, are you going to come back and do this again with me?
Why not?
All right.
You know what? I'm just kind of bouncing from room to room today at KQED because one of these hours I'm going to stroll on over into Pledge Central at KQED. Answer some calls from people calling to make donations to what we do here at KQED.
I'm all over it. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great Mother's Day weekend, everyone.
Absolutely. Hey, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the health care they need on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.